This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor of the show, that's Jam Software, and we'd like to also thank our Patreon subscribers. Bradley, why don't you come in and thank those guys for us?
Yeah, every month, at the end of the month, we like to thank the people that donated $10 or more per month. So this month, we want to thank Envision Design, LLC, Michael Slade, Nicholas Cole Farrell, and Thomas Vershoren. I'm probably butchering that name, so sorry, Thomas. But again, those folks are thanking us with a $10 a month pledge. We also have a list of people on our website that are on our Dean's List, outofschool.net. These people are donating with any $3 or more monthly pledge, so we want to thank those folks as well. But if you want to learn more about our Patreon page, go to outofschool.com, and you can see the section for Patreon, and we will talk about more about that later on in the show.
Okay, so any news, Bradley? What's going on?
The biggest thing I think we've not discussed is the Google Play for Education store getting the heave-ho.
Yeah, that's another one for the Google graveyard, isn't it?
I don't think we've had this quote-unquote spring cleaning that we've had in years past. Kind of the big one I remember was Google Reader, but maybe they've been killing other stuff. But Picasa, I know, got the axe as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Picasa was different in the sense that it had been superseded by something better, which is Google Photos. But Reader just kind of went, and it appears that Google Play for Education has gone as well. Now, I remember... maybe 2 years ago, I was at the Bet Show in London, and there was a big hoo-ha. I think it was 2013, maybe. There was a big hoo-ha about Google releasing the Play Store for Education, and this was supposed to be a dedicated storefront on the Google Play Store where you were going to see educational apps, and there was going to be an infrastructure by which teachers could be assigned a budget, and they could spend that budget on behalf of their students and so on and so on. And this was a really big deal at the time, and everybody said this was the beginning of the Android tablet onslaught in education. And, you know, within 2 years, it's dead. And I think the thing that is very surprising to me about this, not only that's less than one lease lifetime that product has been available, but secondly, they're also shutting down in March. You know, they're shutting down during the school year. So they're not even giving people, you know... We had this situation this week where a new people joined the school, and I was able to kind of get them up and running with the devices and so on. But, you know, if you've got a new student joined your Android tablet school after March, you're not going to be able to get them the apps that you want, except through going through different means. You know, but you have to find another way to buy those apps. To me, that's really surprising, to be honest with you.
And, you know, I think this is not so much symptomatic of Google Play not being popular in education, but how well Chromebooks have worked. And so, but the reality of that is there are schools, maybe not as many, but there are schools who have Android deployments. And I think this is a real problem. I mean, to me, the way, if they wanted to do this, I get that. The way to do this is to do like a sunset, you know, figure out like, okay, when is your last big deployment start, and figure out like, okay, 3 years from that, we're going to kill it. Because I don't know. I mean, I don't know how those contracts work, but if I was a school and I had just signed like a 3-year lease on Google Play and like an Android tablet deployment, I am pretty upset mm-hmm. today with somebody.
Yeah. And I suppose the thing is that you didn't sign a contract with Google, did you? You signed a contract with a reseller, you know, and at some level, the people are providing you services. They don't really have control over whether or not those services can be delivered or will be delivered. And I suppose one thing that Microsoft, for all its faults, is often very, very, very good at is making sure that they don't do something like this to you, basically ever. And in some ways, that's been to the detriment of their business because they've had to support and maintain things that their customers wanted, even though Microsoft didn't even want to make them anymore in some cases. But for Google to pull such a major piece of infrastructure during the school year would be concerning to me. And I'm looking at my Google Drive installation, I'm thinking, it feels okay for now because it's fundamental to the Chromebook project, if you like, but it does make me worry a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, again, I think I don't know that I've ever really seen something like this killed in the middle of a year that it could be so fundamentally integral to schools' infrastructure.
the only way you can look at this in a positive light is to say, well, basically nobody was using Google Play for education anyway. And I suppose to a certain extent that must be true, because, you know, I think we know in general that the only two games in education are Chromebook or iOS, at least for people who are not just doing Windows like they've always done. But you don't hear people talking about Android tablets anymore. And I mean, even really in the retail space, never mind in education, they're just not doing well with tablets on Android. Phones, millions and billions of them. Chromebooks, I honestly think, Bradley, that Chromebooks seem to be doing better than they are when you look at it from inside EdTech, because the vast majority of Chromebooks that are sold are going to education, right? You know, the numbers from, I think it was 2014, something like 80-something percent of Chromebooks are sold in the US, and of that 80%, something like 60% go to education, and the rest go to consumer, and about 1% go to business. So the Chromebook tsunami, if you like, appears to be, to my mind, just a purely educational phenomenon, and even more so just a purely American education phenomenon. I think when you step outside those boundaries, it's not really something that's taken over the world in the way that, certainly in the way that smartphones and smartphone operating systems have.
Yeah, our public schools here in Chattanooga, they're starting their, like, they call it the Tennessee Ready Test, and it was like the, you know, state of Tennessee's mandating a bunch of stuff, and there, like, day one, like, everything fell apart, apparently, here locally. And it wasn't everywhere in the state that fell apart, but it was just, like, here. And they actually had to go to, like, pencil and paper. And it wasn't, like, a Wi-Fi issue. It was, like, an infrastructure issue with the hosting provider. It was a company called Mist, I think, which I believe is owned by Cisco. And, I think these are why Chromebooks probably are selling really well in education.
Online testing, yeah.
You know, so if you feel yeah, and if I look at it, again, I think there are a lot of aspects of Chromebooks I love. But if you're looking at, like, if I just look at my wife, for example, and she's probably a typical home user, 99% of her computing is done on an iOS device. And in fact, 80% of her computing may be done on an iPhone. And so it's like, in the home computer space, Chromebook isn't competing with the Mac, it's competing with the phone. And the phone, for what people are doing at home, is often way plenty. And then, you know, especially if they have one of the bigger phones. And so my wife will pull out a laptop like once a month, and it's usually to like do some picture editing, which she could do on her iPad. She just understands the app that she has on the computer better. So, yeah, that's I think, the challenge for Chromebooks. Is like in the consumer retail space, like home users, they're a solution in some way, search of a problem, because a lot of those users have already moved on from traditional computing devices anyways.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see just how, if Chromebook can break out, and like I say, like with iPad, I think that in some ways it's the generations that are going to leave school from now on. What are they going to take into their workplace, you know? And I think in some ways iOS has got, at least in its favor, what it has is that it's sufficiently different that people will still want it in a way where, you know, like we said in the past, that the way in for Chromebook has often been, well, it looks so like your Windows desktop that you can just actually pretend it is, and most people will be okay with that, whereas iOS can take... applies more of a change to that. So it'll be interesting to see if, when the kids who are currently coming up through Chromebook schools graduate, are they still going to be Chrome OS devotees, or are they just going to be, well, this is a web browser, that's a web browser, I don't really care what's underneath, and, you know, will they be handed a Windows machine in the future and be quite happy with that as well, because everything will be on the web.
Yeah, I guess my big thing at the end of all this is to say, like, either shame on you, Google, or I'm sorry for, like, the three customers that were using it. Maybe both.
Yeah, it may be a bit of column A and a bit of column B that, you know, it is a bit of a rough move to cut something like that during the school year. But Google will have the analytics on that, and if it is genuinely the case that nobody's using it, and it probably is, then they might as well. But I think they've taken a PR hit that they didn't need to take for the sake of a couple of months more operation they're now the platform vendor that shut off something during the school year with about a month's notice, which is not cool. And I think people should be a little more skeptical about that than I've seen them being so far.
Do you think it's possible that they are keeping it running for the end of the school year for the schools who are already using it and just not allowing new signups?
Well, I think that they're still supporting it. They've said they'll continue to support it for people who've got it. But I don't know what support means. I mean, the thing about school deployments is that they're dynamic, right? It's not that you can deploy 100 devices at the start of the year and then you'll only ever need those 100 devices through to the end of the year. As long as they're supported, that's fine. You might need to onboard more people. You might need to replace devices with new devices. You know, how's that all going to work? It's a little bit unclear right now.
Yeah, or maybe it's like they can still, existing accounts still have full access, can remove and add devices, but they're just not accepting new signups, and there's a sunset date 2 years from now when it'll be shut down completely. Because in reality, the guts are still there to keep it running. The Play Store is still running. So it's not like they're shutting the whole thing down. So yeah, either way, like you said, probably it's just a PR hit, and the fact that we're talking about it in negative light probably is the PR.
That's actually the real consequence of the whole thing for Google, isn't it? The loss of customers is probably minimal by comparison.
Yeah. So before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's Jamf Software. They provide IT staff with tools that make Apple deployments work in schools. It's Macs, iPhones, Apple TVs, really, and of course iPads. Anything you've got Apple related, they can manage. That's all they do. So when folks ask me, like, you know, what MDM vendor do you recommend? Obviously, if you're needing to support Windows and Android too, you'll have to look elsewhere. But if you're an all Apple school, an all Apple organization, I definitely recommend Jamf Software. Pay for them myself at our school, and I know Fraser pays for them at his school. So we highly recommend it. They have a great app for teachers called Casper Focus that works on a teacher's iPad to let them take control of their classroom deployment. Work with AirPlay, distribute iBooks, lots of good stuff. And again, it allows teachers to take control of their deployment. They can lock students to a particular app, just all kinds of stuff. So if you're looking at purchasing an MDM over the summer for your next deployment, check out Jamf Software. You can check them out at jampsoftware.com, jamfsoftware.com. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring Out of School this week for the Casper Suite. So we are on part 9 of our Deployment 2016 series. We've been walking through over the past 8 weeks before this, really all of 2016, just the steps that you want to take and think through when doing a big school deployment. And so this week we've come to mobile device management. And I think to me, I guess let's kind of step back and look at what's going on with the news with Apple and the FBI and this this iPhone, locked iPhone thing. And I think, you know, you and I are both not ones just to talk about the latest news every week. That's obviously in the news. And the reason I want to talk about it is this device was owned by the local government there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a work device. Yep.
Yeah, it was a company-issued iPhone 5C. So notice there's no Touch ID. So and it's locked. And the government can brute force unlock it with a 4-digit PIN code, but what's going to happen is the iPhone is going to wipe itself. So they're basically wanting Apple to install a customized version of iOS that will not wipe itself so that the government can unlock it. So that's kind of like the superficial, there's a lot more deeper than that of, how else would this software be used and all that. But we're not here to discuss that. What I do want to make note of is this is why you do an MDM. Because if this phone had been enrolled in MDM, wiping the passcode would have been literally a click. And they had an MDM, but they let it was a department-by-department decision. They used a company called Mobile Iron on whether they installed the MDM or not. And just that's why you do it. And it's not like – I don't think anybody listening to the show is ever going to be in that situation. But you may be in a situation where a phone is locked, an employee has quit, and you need customer data off that device that they put in the Notes app or something.
Yeah, it's one of these. MDM is kind of like a hygiene thing. The ideal situations where you don't need it, but you will always need it. But when you come to sort of extreme situations like that, you're going to be very grateful that you had an MDM device or MDM service in place and all your devices enrolled in it. So I think it's probably worth going back through a little bit, Bradley, of the how did we get to where we are? How did MDM come to be the kind of thing that can keep the FBI off your tail? How did it come to be so important? And I think the way that I want to look at this first is just to talk about when we started back in 2010, we had a tool called iPhone Configuration Utility, which was, in some ways, it was designed for enterprises to just configure a few iPhones. And, this was back when the scale was nothing like what it is now. But many of the same principles that were in place with iPhone Configuration Utility still apply today. This was where you could first create configuration profiles, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And this was how you put them onto a device over a USB cable. And that was all you had. So you had to plug in every device. And then as time went on, we got a program called Apple Configurator, which you will have heard us both praise and complain about from time to time. But Apple Configurator was just a way to essentially scale up iPhone configuration utility to much larger deployments. It was designed to be able to sort of run unattended, if you like, and just plug in devices, and it would process any device that was plugged in over USB, but it was still always plugging in over USB. But that was where volume purchase was first brought in, when Apple made a way for schools and businesses to bulk buy iOS applications. And then those apps would be delivered as coupon codes from the store, and Apple Configurator could redeem those codes automatically for each device. And that was kind of the way that deployment was done in the first, I suppose, what's that going to be, maybe 6 years of the iPhone, first 3 years of the iPad. Those were kind of the basic techniques of deployment. And since that time, mobile device management servers have come in, primarily come in from the BlackBerry configuration world, I think it's fair to say, Bradley. And you know, those were companies that were deploying, you know, tens of thousands of BlackBerries, and they had servers and software to configure those devices, send settings to them, check their inventory and so on. And then those services were brought over to iOS and then later to iPad. And those have been very effective. But what happened for the first couple of years was that the pricing model that was being offered to schools, for example, was just, it was out of the corporate world. You know, it was enterprise pricing models, and schools couldn't afford it. It would have been a crazy amount of money. I remember the first time I asked for a quote for NDM software, I was just like, "That is, there's no way we're ever going to have that because it's so expensive." But now newer companies have moved in, solutions that are more targeted towards education and priced more appropriately for education as well. And that's kind of where we are today, is with a wide range of MDM servers, a wide range of MDM vendors, and all of them a lot more accessible to schools than ever before.
Yeah, I remember, like, originally, like, I would quote when it would be like 50% of my overall technology budget for the year.
Yeah.
So, and, well, and the thing is, at the time, I just didn't do a lot. And so it's like, yeah, you couldn't even justify it now. I mean, you could even justify that more now for what it can do.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that, too, it's interesting, like, when Apple Configurator launched, like how it worked with VPP codes, that was the first time, because VPP was around before that, but we just didn't have a way to, the only way to do anything was just like email codes out, and you lost those codes. So Apple Configurator 1.0, it made it where you could like load apps onto a device and then take them back off and get that code back. And so that was the big difference there. So in some ways, you can see where MDM might be going based on what Configurator's doing, because Configurator's still around. And I think we're just now to the point where like Configurator and MDM are parity on their feature set, maybe outside of some of the supervision stuff. No, I guess you could do all the supervision stuff with DEP now.
Yeah, well, now an MDM server and the device enrollment program basically equals up what Apple Configurator could do over a cable, but being done over the air. And I think this is what happened a few years ago, but just post iPad, I suppose, Apple changed their strategy a little bit, to realizing, I think, how iPhone was going to be adopted in enterprise, that the way that they used to configure iPods and iPhones was no longer going to be enough. And so the MDM was actually kind of made the centerpiece of everything that Apple was doing in terms of configuration and enrollment and device deployment. So many of the Apple programs, like the device enrollment program, they basically have no interesting interface in the Apple side of the house at all. All they've got is a website where you log in and you can see a list of your MDM servers and a list of your devices, and you assign one to the other. Whereas all of the control and all the stuff is down to your MDM vendor to provide all of that, all the sending apps to devices, sending configuration profiles to devices, editing new configuration profiles. That's all now done in your MDM. And that was a major change of strategy a few years ago. And that it puts a lot more emphasis on getting the right MDM software so that you, A, can keep up with Apple, and B, keep up with the new features in iOS, so that you can continue to roll your deployment forward over time. So that was kind of where we got to. And there have been some other new things that have come along. Device enrollment was one. The other one is this idea of device-based app assignment. And that's something that's come through as another feature that's possible in iOS deployment. This is where you can assign an app to a device without an Apple ID working on the device. And that's another thing that your MDM has to support. And if your MDM doesn't support it, you can't use that feature. So that's kind of where we are with mobile device management. Basic kind of capabilities that an MDM software can provide you, it's the main way that you're going to deploy apps. it's the main way that you're going to check in on the status of your devices. So, for example, what iOS version are people running? Check into that. Whose devices are full? What network are those devices connected to? All questions like that. And then the other one is you're going to look at assigning VPP codes to devices as well. So those are some of the things that your MDM server can do for you, sending out configuration profiles as well. So we're going to look at some of those and talk about how you can look at different MDM solutions and pick one that might be suitable for what you want to do.
Yeah, because it's technically possible to change MDMs. It's not easy, especially if you have a large deployment. I mean, you're never at a place where you're going to like lose your app licensing, and then none of that's stored in the MDM like, kind of forever. It's done with a token. But changing MDM vendors especially mid-deployment, is not easy. I mean, it would be a little bit easier like with a fresh deployment because of how like it connects to the DEP server, but it would just be so time-consuming mid-deployment.
Yeah, it would basically be like rebooting your deployment in mid-air, because you would have to, what would be the minimum you'd have to do? You'd have to at least unenroll all devices, which would probably mean the loss of all your data because your apps would be revoked. And then you might get a grace period in there, but still you're going to have to do a re-enrollment on every device, and that is a very tricky business to do.
Yeah, I would not want to do that. I mean, I don't know of a reason for any amount of money if you had any sort of scale in your deployment while you would want to use that.
Yeah, you'd have to be on some kind of burning platform. And we will talk about one such burning platform in a little minute, I think. But, you know, essentially you're looking at, the only time this comes up as a question is when you refresh all your devices, that would be an opportunity to change from, one MDM provider to another. And we're looking at that for, we're not looking at changing MDM providers, but we're looking at a refresh come this summer. And we could, when we take in all the old devices, we'll unenroll them. I could tear down that MDM and I could bring up another one, and my new devices will be routed to that MDM server through device enrollment. But that's the only natural break in your life when you want to do that is when you completely overhaul your deployment.
Yes. If you were starting out fresh today with a deployment, what were the things like? How would you start even looking for a vendor?
Well, I suppose that the first question you want to ask yourself is how much work do you want to do yourself? And there are some vendors where you can basically buy a license to their software and you can host it yourself and you can run it that way. And of course, there are plenty of vendors now that will host these things for you. And when we started. That was the only way you could run the Casper suite was to download it yourself and run it on a machine that you controlled. So we did that, and we actually hosted it on an Amazon EC2 server, which has worked really, really well for us over that period. And we're still doing that for now. But since that time, Jamf have brought out a hosting solution, which I think you use, Bradley. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, many other providers will also host their own software for you so that you don't have to do it yourself. Personally, if I was starting over again, I would go for the hosted solution rather than managing it myself. But my experience has been that it's not a difficult thing to manage as long as you get the correct ports open. Much easier, I think, to manage it on somewhere like Amazon EC2 rather than managing it inside your own firewall, because if your devices go off network, you're going to want to be able to reach them with configurations and settings, even if they're somewhere else. Particularly during a holiday or something like that.
Well, and I think my recommendation would be you should go host it unless you have a reason not to. And so if you have the expertise in-house to do that, you're probably going to be having guys that are saying like, no, we could do that cheaper in-house. Like just buy the license, we can manage that. Or I can run it on Amazon EC2. But if you don't have the expertise to do that, don't do it. Because it's not dramatically that much more expensive to have it hosted. And then it's just one less headache for you to worry about. It's like, to me, it's equivalent of running your own email server versus not. Yep. In my opinion, for most companies, you should start with the idea of hosting unless you're at such a scale that you can have on-site expertise managing that. So your typical 500-person school or 300-person school or whatever you are, maybe one or two people in the IT department, just go host it. It's one less thing to worry about, especially for something that goes down, that it's just going to suck if it goes down.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical, you know, and if you're not absolutely sure that you can deliver a good uptime on that, hosted is the way to go.
Yeah. So after that, I think the question, so you decide the hosted versus on-site. And in some ways, it's like two questions of hosting. Is it, do you host it yourself, like on an Amazon EC2, or do you have a vendor that has like a cloud platform as well? So that
yeah, I suppose those are two separate questions, aren't they? You know, you can host self-host on-site or off-site, and then the question of whether you do on-site or off-site.
And then you kind of look at, depending on, do you need an Apple-centric MDM or do you want a multi-platform? And I don't think there's like a negative here. You either need an Apple-centric one or you need a multi-platform one. I think if you're an all-Apple school, go with the Apple-centric vendor, simply because, as you know, we've seen a lot of growth in the MDM market over the years in terms of what Apple allows. And an Apple-centric company is probably going to be slightly faster about, you know, having support for that, because that's the only platform they're having to worry about. We're like a multi-platform is having to pay attention to Android, iOS, Mac, and Windows.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I like about one of the reasons why we chose the Casper suite was because it is Apple focused and iOS focused, and what that means is that a lot of the workflows and a lot of the terminology in the interface uses the actual terms rather than some vague euphemism for all those capabilities on all different platforms. Now I know that JAMS have some support for Android now, but it's certainly not kind of their main focus compared to iOS and Mac. So yeah, it's pretty much a binary choice, Bradley, isn't it? You either need a cross-platform solution or you can get away with just using an Apple solution. And that choice is probably made for you, but it directs you down one path or other when it comes to looking at an MDM vendor.
Yeah, and then actually, you know, even when you decide on what kind of vendor, how you want to host it, then you've actually got to find a vendor. And this is a market that has been really heavy on the mergers and acquisitions over the years. Mm-hmm. Especially as, you know, there haven't been as many hardware makers when it comes to, you know, mobile devices in the workplace. You've really dominated by iOS for, you know, a large scale, and Android. And so for companies that didn't make anything, that were used to being able to sell computers and, you know, on-site security appliances, getting into MDM was a way to still have a foothold in the enterprise market. Because, you know, again, let's look at VMware, for example. I mean, a lot of their solutions were starting to be commoditized in some ways. Yeah. And so they picked up, I think it was AirWatch, am I right there?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to, and so you need to kind of look at, like, what, you know, what size vendor do you want to use, you know, that kind of thing. And
a lot of that will be determined by your budget, won't it? You know, if you've only got $5 to $6 per device to spend, you're not going to somebody with banner adverts in an airport, because they're talking IBM money for a lot of their stuff. And IBM have got their own platform as well, don't they?
Yes, they picked up MAS 360, which is another hosted one. It's actually quite nice as well. So I think the first question you got to ask yourself, are you looking for something to integrate in with on-site hardware? So if you've got an on-site firewall that they offer an MDM that's pretty comparable.
Makes a ton of sense. Yep.
That does make a lot of sense, because it's already – and I'm always a big fan of integration there. Mm-hmm. If your Wi-Fi vendor offers a MDM that supports all the features of, you know, the platform you're using, that makes a lot of sense. And so in some ways I would start there. Like, you know, can you integrate with something of your hardware with a similar experience as a dedicated solution?
One of the examples there that many schools are using is Lightspeed, who have, you know, been providing firewalls and security filtering for schools for a long time, and then brought out an MDM solution that kind of integrates in many ways with the firewalling and the grouping that you already have there.
So the next thing is, like, does the server, you know, kind of support custom workflows or enable you to kind of work faster and work for you? Any examples you have there?
Yeah, well, what comes to mind here, Bradley, is the way that I work in my own MDM. And one of the reasons why I am happy with the Casper suite is because it does a lot of work for me while I'm not looking. And basically what it does is it has a lot of email notification capabilities. So what I can do is I can create custom groups based on criteria, and then get email when the composition of those groups changes. So, for example, here's a group where it includes all the devices whose storage capacity is used storage space is greater than 75% of its maximum. And I get an email whenever somebody's device goes into that group, and I get an email whenever somebody's device goes out of that group. Here's a smart group of all the devices which have a certain app name installed. So when somebody installs an app like that, I get an email. And when they uninstall the app, I also get an email. So things like that, those are very useful. And there are surprisingly many MDMs that don't support that kind of reporting and analysis. There are, of course, others that do as well. It's not just an exclusive feature to Casper Suite, but it's that kind of thing. The reason I'm sort of saying this is because, well, this is maybe not as true as it used to be. Now we have things like DEP, but in times past, what I used to say was that the MDM protocol is sufficiently simple that everybody can support the basics, right? So everybody can make a configuration profile. Everybody can send one to all your devices. Everybody can get the inventory of your device and show it to you in a web browser. But then what do you get beyond those basics, right? What do you get beyond sending an app to the device? And it's things like, can the system work for you? Can it automatically create groups? Can it plug into an LDAP server? Can it do this? Can it do that? All of those things, how does that all work together to make your sysadmin's life a lot easier and faster and more automated than it ever has been before? And another thing to look for, and this is something that Casper has and some others do as well, is there an API below the system? So do you have to always hit a web page and click, click, click? Or can you actually script against your MDM and run queries, run reports that are maybe custom for yourself? Or you can write a script that pulls something from your MDM and does something else with it somewhere else. All of those things are pretty powerful.
Yeah, and I think these are the kind of introspective questions you need to be thinking through when you're shopping MDM vendors, because you may not be thinking about those needs, but you certainly want to decide now whether you want that before you actually sign on the dotted line.
Yeah, I think what I would be looking for in any MDM solution is, does it have the ability for me to be alerted of anomalous conditions, whatever those conditions are, and I would like to set them up for myself, ideally, because every school is going to have different concerns. So if a particular app has become problematic in your school, you might want to be able to say, I only want to know about devices with this app installed or something like that. Does it enable those kind of notifications and automatic processing, or do I have to log in every time and just manually check what's going on in my system today? And I don't want to have to do that unless I have a completely unique situation that I haven't faced before. But any predictable problem that I can think of, I want to be able to set up something in my MDM that will alert me when this condition arises that I need to then go ahead and take some action on.
Yeah, lots to think about. What else do we have here? Depending on what size your department, do they support various roles for your team? So let's say you have a help desk person that you don't want to give full access to. Could you give them part of your access to part of your management system?
Yep. So things like read only access, or giving people the ability to log in and just reset a passcode, but nothing else. Can you give fractional control? Do you need to? I mean, in my situation, I don't need to because I'm the only sysadmin. So I just get to do everything. I have to do everything. But in other situations, you might... I've heard of schools where they have one big MDM for maybe a group of schools. And what they do is they give each administrator or the head teacher or in a smaller school, they give them partial control of their devices, so they can do something like assign apps to users, but they can't enroll new devices, they can't wipe devices, they can just do those basic things. And then as those people kind of demonstrate their competency in using that level, they get to move up a level in their control and up a level for the devices that are assigned to their school overall. That's quite a nice way to do it, and quite usable.
And we discussed, we had on the notes here, to look at the expertise versus hosted versus on-site. And that, again, that's something you just need to consider. And it's one of the things I told somebody today is there are certain things I'm good at and there are certain things I'm not good at. And on the scale, on the list of certain things I'm not good at, about half of those I don't need to be good at, because it's mm-hmm. You can just not be good at that and have people that are, that you pay for those skills. And because you can't be the expert at everything, so it's not a knock to say like we don't have the expertise to run a, you know, the Casper Suite on site, would rather do the hosted. It's not a knock on your skills, it's just not what you're good at, and that's okay, because you're good at things that maybe cannot be moved to hosted platforms as easily.
Yep. It's worth mentioning that many MDM vendors provide training and certification for their services, because You know, you and I use these services in a small environment, but we still need them as much as people who are running 10,000 devices. But of course, when you're running 10,000 devices in your MDM, you're probably running that service on multiple machines in a cluster or something like that. And there is like enterprise grade certification classes you can get for some of these services. And if you are going to scale up to that number, it may be very valuable to get that kind of training.
And next thing is, look at the history of how they've updated their platform. Nothing frustrates me more than an enterprise company that are slow to provide updates. It seems like it's the smaller companies that get things out faster. Printer vendors are, you know, worst example. I know like the people who make the Promethean boards, they're so slow in getting out updates for new Apple, you know, Mac OS updates. Terrible. You know, it's months and months later. So, you know, and that may be hard to talk about, and that's where you could maybe get some customer references and ask them, like, you know, when iOS 9 came out, how quickly were they ready with support for the new features?
Yep. And in many cases, you may be able to find out the version history of the suite. So, for example, again, I'm talking about Casper because I have experience with it. But if you go onto the Jamf Nation website, you can see that's kind of their user forum. You can see when all the updates were posted and what was contained in those updates. And you can look back historically and you can see, well, what did they have on the day that iOS 9 was released? Did they have day one support? Yes, they did in that case. And I would certainly, that would be one of the first questions I would ask a vendor. And I wouldn't ask them about their intentions for the future, because they'll always say that they'll be up to date, but they're unlikely to be. But I would ask them about the past. So when did you ship your iOS 9 support? Was it full iOS 9 support or was it basic iOS 9 support? And so on and so on. And as things like iOS 9.3 come into the game as well, you're going to want to ask questions about that. What are your plans for that, for example? How can we configure those things? Just come to mind, Bradley, one of the things that people don't really use very much in MDM is the ability to send configurations to apps on iOS. But do you know what I mean by that?
No.
I'm not sure. What that is, you know, like when you set up an app and you sort of set the initial settings for the app, the preferences, what you can do is you can actually create a bundle on your MDM server and you can send those preferences to some or all of the devices under your control. And what that means is you can sort of automatically configure apps for people. Not every MDM server supports that capability, but that's going to become really important in iOS 9.3, because that's how the Apple Classroom app gets set up for your teachers, right? So if your MDM doesn't support sending app configurations to apps, then you're going to have trouble adopting Apple Classroom. So that's something to be aware of as time goes on, is how do you get, do you have that capability? And you know, those are features that have been in the platform for a couple of years now that Apple are leveraging to make Classroom only accessible to teachers. Your MDM will have to send a configuration package to those apps. And if your MDM doesn't support that, it's going to be difficult to adopt that kind of feature too.
Great point. Another reason you want to look at just their commitment to the platform. The last thing is the Meraki cautionary tale. We talked about this years ago, or a year or so ago. They had a free MDM that they gave to anybody, that whether you had their Wi-Fi or not, they kept it up to date. And then I guess it was about this point last year, the free version would no longer get any more updates.
Yep. And so they got bought by Cisco, didn't they? Which is always a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, of course, that was a couple years ago, and it went on fine. And obviously, it was costly to run it, but they did take a PR hit, and obviously it didn't affect them too much because they're obviously still in business. But just use that as a cautionary tale. I would just avoid free MDMs.
Yeah, it's one of these things that because of the extreme difficulty of changing, it's something to be aware of as you're going along this road. Is this going to be here for the long haul? I mean, we talked about Google Play for Education as another example. Is this going to be here for long enough that I can complete my mission? And then if I have to change, I can change at a natural point rather than... and I suppose, you know, with Meraki, as with Google Play, they supported what was already there for time to come, but they weren't adding anything new. And the thing is that Apple's moving quickly and MDM is really evolving on the Apple platform. And if you're on a platform where you're not going to get any new features, you're really in trouble, because I think that was even before device enrollment really shipped out, Bradley, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because that was your first thing that you didn't get, and now you're not going to be able to do some of these other things that we're talking about as well. And as time goes on, new features are going to come out, and those are going to be more difficult or impossible for you to adopt without changing MDM platforms.
So last section we have is your MDM setup strategy. And obviously some of this will be, you know, we can't get too detailed on this because we don't know who you're using, but we thought we'd offer some tips on just how you kind of want to think through it and organize it. The first thing is configure it with the device enrollment program for the long term. Don't be thinking of like, how does this look next year? But how does this look 6 years from now in terms of how you organize your devices?
This is something that I got caught out with in my first couple of years of using MDM, was that I would set it up for the classes that were about to start this year. And then when it came to next summer, well, at the very least, I've got to rename all those classes, but I may also have to change the apps that are installed for those classes as well. And that was something that was time-consuming and very easy to get wrong, because you're kind of setting up large lists of apps, and if you might miss one, you might accidentally not send it to the right class or something like that. So what I've started to do, just as one tip, is I group my devices in terms of the graduation year. So I say, you know, I've got class of 2017, class of 2018, 19, 20, 21, and that's as going further down the school. Because those classes, plus or minus one or two individuals, talk about that in a second, those classes will basically keep the same graduation year for their whole school career, right? Because the school is a defined length of time. And if you stay to the end, you will graduate in 2019, 2020. That group is fairly static. Occasionally, an individual might either move up one or down one because they either get accelerated or they get held back in school. So that's something just to bear in mind, is that that's not 100% true in all cases, but it's broadly enough true for enough people that it's a reasonable organizing principle for long-term MDM use. The other thing I like to do is I like to try and extract the apps that everybody gets from the apps that individual classes want. And this is something that I've tried to do a bit more recently in the last year, is to have a kind of core app list that every single iPad in the whole school gets. And then later on, I'll say, well, okay, you know, the second year class, they need to have these different apps for maths or whatever. And those ones will change, but hopefully the core set will stay the same over all time.
So next thing is, ask yourself the question, do all your devices need to be enrolled? We already mentioned the case with the FBI. But you can also think about your staff iPhones. If they want access to the corporate Wi-Fi network, you can force the enrollment into your MDM from a data security perspective. But then again, you're gonna have to pay for those. And so you have to, you know, it's not like it's Wi-Fi where, you know, whether it's online or not, it's costing you the same. You do have to pay for those devices if you want to have them enrolled.
The reason we do this is from our compliance with the Data Protection Act point of view, is that one of the provisions of the law is that you have to prevent user data from accidentally being disclosed or being damaged or destroyed. And because many of our staff members use their smartphones and their personal iPads to access school resources, such as our Google Drive system, where some personal information might be shared with them through that process, We insist on either you don't use your personal device to access any school resource at all, period, including your school email, or if you do, our request is that you would enroll your device in our MDM server. And what that enables us to do is it enables us to provide evidence that we have set up the capabilities for remote wipe. So if a teacher loses their iPad or their phone, for example, we can remotely lock it, remotely wipe it. And that shows that we have done our due diligence in terms of that, plus also changing the user password in Google Docs, for example. That would be our kind of compliance in that matter. And that's basically the security rule we have. And this is one place where cloud storage actually, I love Google Docs despite everything, is because in large part, all that data never gets downloaded to the phone. Right, it's not actually stored on the local storage on the device. It's being accessed over the network through to the cloud, and it's all in the cloud, where I would argue it was actually safer than anything I could provide personally in the school. And that's something that I think works really well for us for data compliance.
Yeah, much better than a thumb drive in the pocket.
Oh my goodness, thumb drives and bags of paper, those are the worst. And it's actually the printer that keeps me up at night. is much more concerned about the printer than the cloud.
I get it. I see what comes across our printer. Yeah. Next thing is, how do you organize your devices in there? We kind of mentioned that before about thinking long term, but you know, what's your structure there? How are your classes organized? How are your student bodies, how are they organized? I think that's the question you must look at, and then figure out how you're organized school wise, and then what makes them. How do you do that in your MDM? So it's simple, easy to migrate year to year, but also easy to manage day to day.
One of the things that some MDM vendors provide is what are sometimes called extended attributes or tags on objects in their database. So in Casper, they're called extended attributes. And what you can do is you can say, well, here's a new field called, let's say it's called pupil's behavior status or something. And you could give two or three different options for that. And then that attribute would be applied to a user object. So you could say that if somebody has a behavior status of restricted in some way, then you could scope certain configuration profiles to be applied to that person's device. So, for example, if you had somebody who was in detention, one of the punishments you could automatically apply might be to send a profile that disables their camera, if that was the reason why they were in detention, for example. So that's another... It's another axis on which you can organize devices, is you can actually tag them with certain features. And then that can be the way that you pull them out for smart grouping or even just in searches. You can say, show me all the devices whose user's behavior status is restricted, for example. And that's something that is worth bearing in mind. It's important not to go crazy with this, though, because one of the things that I found over time is that the more complicated or the more things I hook on to scope configuration profiles and apps, the more I'm going to forget the right way to do it. So if I say, well, you know, this music app only goes to users who are tagged as music students, then later on somebody's going to ask me to put that music app on somebody else's, and do I make that student a music student, or do I just send it directly to their device? This is where it gets a bit confusing and a little bit tricky. So I think the simpler you can keep it, the better. And if you can just assign things to classes, that's probably the easiest thing to do to start with. And then what I do at the level up from that is, if I have specialized apps that only a few people need access to, what I do is I create a new group and I manually put the people who need that into that group. So, for example, there are some kids in the school who've got GoPro cameras, and they asked me if I could install the GoPro app on their iPads so that they could download the footage from the cameras, which I was happy to do. It's no big deal. So I had an additional group. I've got all the classes, and then I've got a group called GoPro users. And then the GoPro app is only scoped to that group. And then whoever gets a GoPro and asks me for access to it, I just put them into that group. So I'm grouping the kids to the apps in some cases as well as scoping scoping the apps to the kids as well.
Right. Yeah. You see, that's a problem. The GoPro stuff is not things you would have thought about when you're first setting it up.
No, absolutely not. You know, or kids that got a drone for their Christmas or something, and they want the drone control app on their device. No big deal to put it on, but it's worth spending quite a lot of time thinking about this. And this is something that I think that schools often get wrong, is that they don't really have the sysadmin mindset of what happens next year, what happens the year after, what happens the year after. And what I would encourage you to do when you're planning how you're going to structure your MDM setup, to write out what you think you're going to do, and then write out the steps that would be required to move that into next year. So it would be rename this group, rename that group, take these apps off, put these apps on, and try and get to a situation where the number of steps that you're doing at the end of each year are so minimal that it actually doesn't look like too much work. And that would be a good exercise to do before you commit to a large-scale deployment of a certain MDM structure and then find that you have to change it halfway through the year.
Yeah, changing those kind of things mid-year, that's just never... I think your point is, it's like doing it mid-flight. That's a good example.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's not impossible. I've done it. I did actually reorganize all the groups during the school year once, but it was tricky and it involved a lot of sheets of paper just to make sure I didn't accidentally wipe out people's apps. So it was a case of sort of scoping them to the new group and then unscoping them from the old group, and because it was the same people, it worked out as the end. They then actually get their apps revoked halfway through that.
Next thing is, you're talking about apps. How do you handle app licensing? I mean, what's your model there? And of course, that's changed a lot over the years. It's getting a lot easier. I mean, the way it's structured now is you can kind of drop the, you can install those things at, at will and then pull them at any time. So that's gotten, again, a ton easier over the years.
Yeah. One of the other questions that you might want to ask is, are you pushing apps or are you making them available in some way? Casper has this idea of a self-service app. So what happens is an icon appears on the home screen. It's a web clip, actually, where users can hit it and apps that are available to that device will be shown there. And the student can request that that app gets installed. Or you can just sort of directly push the app to the device. And have a wee think about whether and which one you would want to do is quite a good idea. I would recommend pushing, if you have that core app set that I talked about, I would recommend pushing that set to every device that enrolls. But then later on for more optional apps or apps that people might want but don't actually necessarily need straight away, thinking about maybe just putting them into your self-service or whatever portal your NDM provider gives you and letting the kids request that themselves may be a better option.
Yeah, again, this discussion was a lot more difficult a few years ago.
Yeah, most definitely.
This is a big one. This we could almost have a whole show on this, and I think we have in the past, is how restrictive are your profiles?
Yeah, I think this is something, I don't know if we've actually maybe got another show in the pipeline just about the deep, deep detail of what's possible with configuration profiles. But good question, and it also fits into your NDM. So two things just to mention at a very high level for now, Bradley. One is, it's okay to have lots of profiles. We now deliver something like 13 profiles to every device, but each profile controls one feature that we want to restrict. And this is a big change from my early days of doing Apple configuration, where I would just have like, here's the master profile that every device in Cedars gets. I want to do that anymore, because what I now want is I want the ability to layer these profiles on. And if you have a conflict between two profiles, so say one profile says the camera should be on and the other profile says the camera should be off, the rule is always that the most restrictive profile wins. So you can just have one, if one of those 13 profiles says the camera's off, then the camera's off. Even if 12 of the 13 say the camera should be on, it's not a voting system, it's the most restrictive wins. So that's a really nice technique for making it really flexible to apply and remove restrictions. And I found as time goes on, as our students get more sophisticated iOS users, there are sometimes good reasons for me taking off certain restrictions that I would otherwise want to put on, because either you're doing a special project that you need a special app for that might be 17 plus, or you need access to FaceTime, for example, for some particular reason. And restricting some of those things or removing some of those restrictions is becoming a bit more nuanced for us than just, here's the same set for everybody. But then this is another feature you might want to look for in an MDM. What I do with those profiles is I say every single person gets this profile, but I can also list exclusions, right? So instead of having to always opt in a subset, I can say every single person gets this profile except for people in this group or except for this one individual. And that's a nice feature as well. It's an inclusion list and an exclusion list. And the intersection of that is that the intersection? I forget my set theory, but the point is I can have some people, everybody gets it, and then I can exclude some people if I need to. And that's a nice feature to have in an MDM as well, because sometimes you've got to just be very precise with what it is you want to do with these profiles.
Yeah, it's just, we probably should add that to the list and do a deep dive on that.
Yeah. I think we should.
Last thing is, do you want to deliver your profiles over the air or via configurator, Apple configurator?
So with this one, in the post-device enrollment program world, everything over the air. Right? In my current deployment, which is not under DEP, I have what we call the Cedars base profile, and that only includes a few restrictions. What does it do? It says no explicit materials from any of the stores, no downloading of movies or TV shows, and no apps that are over 12 plus. Right? Those are the only three restrictions that we put onto every device. And we put all of those on using Apple Configurator, because we want to guarantee those settings are always there. Whereas every other restriction that we put on comes via MDM. And so far, we've not had a problem with people unenrolling from MDM and getting those restrictions back. But when you go into the device enrollment program, it's possible for you to enforce the enrollment of MDM over the air. So previously, in all previous years, it's not been possible to force a device to stay under NDM control. But if you have devices managed under the device enrollment program, they will always be under your NDM control. So you can actually safely put out all your configuration profiles over the air because you know that the user can never take that device out of enrollment.
Yeah, that's been the big change. And as you know, when it comes to DEP, and that's another reason to, we mentioned before, to not do a BYOD, because you can only get these devices through DEP when they're purchased directly from Apple by the school or through the reseller.
Yeah. Yep. And it's not the case that just because you're going to supervise the device and you're going to put it in device enrollment, that doesn't mean you have to apply restrictions, right? You can have a device in DEP, a device that's supervised, and have zero restrictions on the device. And that is fine too. But the point is that you've given yourself a platform on which you can apply restrictions if you need to. And that's really, really important, I think, from a professional point of view, to have at least those capabilities if you need them, because the cost of getting them is so high that it is important to have them when you start.
Yeah, agreed. So that kind of wraps up what we're thinking on MDM. Again, this is, like every show, this is to help you think through this further. It's not necessarily to give you, this is what you have to pick, but just give you the tools to make the decision that's best for your context. So again, we'll do a show, deep dive on configuration profiles throughout this series as well. We need to add that. So thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Jamp Software for being our sponsor this week. Thanks to all our Patreon supporters, for people that support the show. If you don't know what Patreon is, those are people that support the show financially every month with a donation as small as a dollar, up to have somebody as high as $50 a month. So if you like the show, you like what we do, that's a way to kind of show your support and help us pay the bills and keep the show going. So you can learn more about that at outofschool.net. There's a link for Patreon. If you're interested in sponsoring the show for your company or your app, we have a sponsorship section on our website as well. As always, reviews and iTunes are appreciated. iTunes.com/outofschool. And also just sharing the show with your friends on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, email. We always appreciate that. Use the hashtag #deploy16 on Twitter to, if you have any questions, we'll watch those. Or if you want to tweet directly at me, I am at Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and my blog is chambersdaily.com.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and hope you have a great week.